The Alpha Fund AVA project is the Autonomous Value Authority Token Project. Alpha Fund AVA is a decentralized autonomous organization on the Ethereum blockchain, and it's sold on Uniswap. It's also the official token of the Alpha Wave podcast. You're listening to the Alpha Wave podcast, and I am Simon Alexander Breeden. Now, what you're about to listen to is rantings by me, mostly on September 22nd, 2020, and then some today, April 26th. And this isn't the normal format that I normally do, but otherwise these recordings would not have been released, and some of them I thought were good in regards to just kind of expressing my view about this space, what my stances are, and information that I'm aware of that many people I think may not be aware of. I wanted to share that so that there could be debate in our newsletter or debate on our podcast channel, on WhatsApp group, or on our Twitter account or whatever. So I hope you enjoy this information, or me ranting, and if you listen all the way to the end, you definitely should consider getting the Alpha Fund AVA token and being a holder and a team member of our project, because you are definitely hardcore crypto. All right, so no further ado, here is me ranting for the next 45 minutes. Polkadot provides the ability for people to create their own blockchains. Now, Ethereum provided the ability for people to create their own tokens. Dr. Gavin Wood created both Ethereum and Polkadot. Now, Ethereum allows people to make smart contracts to communicate with the Ethereum virtual machine. And those smart contracts are written in Solidity code. Now, Ethereum 2.0 is moving to WebAssembly and Rust. Polkadot is moving to WebAssembly and Rust. Now, Ethereum and the Ethereum virtual machine for Ethereum 1.0 will be moving over to Ethereum WebAssembly machine, I believe it's called. EWASM, whatever that means. Ethereum WebAssembly machine. And that will be with WebAssembly. WebAssembly is basically like high-powered software within the browser that is serverless. And it is seen to be replacing JavaScript. Now, DeFi, decentralized finance, it is basically open source finance written with smart contracts, Solidity code. The reason why the majority of DeFi, decentralized finance applications, dApps, are in the Ethereum ecosystem is because Solidity code has a barrier to entry. It's very hard to learn. It's a new language. It's its own language. And once you've learned it, you really don't want to start learning anything else. Now, Viper is kind of Python-based, and Solidity is JavaScript-based. Python is known for integrating well with machine learning and artificial intelligence models. Now, that means Viper will be basically more equipped at integrating artificial intelligence into smart contracts, I guess. The main thing you need to know is DeFi is eating the world. And if you're not in the space, you're on the plate. People who speak multiple languages have the ability to learn multiple new languages more easily than those who don't speak multiple languages. Except for the fact that sometimes certain languages make it more difficult for you to learn new languages. For example, the difference between Mandarin and English. It's probably a lot easier, simpler, to learn French or Spanish or Italian if you're an English speaker than it would be to learn Mandarin or Russian. One might say the same thing about Russian, or Mandarin. The main point I'm making is Solidity Code is its own language. You may know JavaScript, but that does not mean you know Solidity. And Solidity was created in 2015. Libra has its own code and it's its own language. Now, a lot of these languages are shifting over to WebAssembly and Rust, but even that is very different from JavaScript, Python, PHP, SQL, NoSQL, Swift, TypeScript. It's all different. Now, if you know Node.js, and if you know Linux, and if you know these languages, that's great. And many computer programmers, computer scientists, know many different languages. But people get antiquated, and people get stuck in a rut. People get stuck in what they know. And Solidity is its own language. This means a whole new world of developers can develop Solidity code, smart contracts that make upwards of hundreds of millions of dollars within months, while software engineers who have been software engineers for 10, 20 years have no clue how to code these contracts, and they don't have the bandwidth to put in the energy or the time to figure it out. Solidity is a young man's game. I'm not saying you got to be young to do it, but you have to be willing to go all in a new environment with new philosophies, new ideologies, new concepts, like a person on a mission, because Solidity developers are missionaries. And this is a key thing that most people don't understand, is that the barrier to entry to even understand how to code this complex, intricate language is one that one doesn't want to then just give up on. It's like, oh, now I'll go over to Tezos and I'll code OCaml, or I'll go over to EOS and I'll do WebAssembly now, or no. Do you have any idea the amount of sanity sacrificed to understand Solidity and to be able to code something like a yearn.finance smart contract, or a proof of weak hands contract, or a FOMO 3D contract, or a Maker DAO DAI, or an Aragon OS, all those Aragon OS, that code base, that shit is crazy. Do you have any idea what it takes? No. You're not going to do it. And being someone who is sacrificing their sanity to understand the intricacies of these contracts, I know firsthand. I can see it in your eyes. You're a faker. Your company, your ICO, your project, your concept, it's going to change everything. It's so much better than all this other stuff that you know is hot, but you don't quite understand and you missed out on. You're not real. You're not genuine. I can see it in your eyes. You are not studying this shit, and you need to stop. Just stop.
There's definitely a war on DeFi, and I think there's a war on just
innovation and just creativity. You know, Yearn.finance, yield farming just in general, flash loans, flash swaps, Uniswap, just forking a whole damn exchange. Things like this are absolutely 100% original, unique, creative, innovative, spellbinding. I think it's just ridiculous for anybody to call themselves a financial advisor, to call themselves a VC, to call themselves an institutional investor or an investor, or to even act like they understand money in any way, and to be present in this day and time, in this era, and not be just completely blown away by what's going on in DeFi. And anybody that's kind of telling you, oh, Bitcoin will go to zero, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. They don't really understand the space. They don't really understand the technology. And there's nothing wrong with not understanding stuff. There's just plenty wrong with pretending like you do. And the problem with it is traditional finance is a who you know environment. And crypto, DeFi, Web3 is so what you know. It's ridiculous. And it's bottom up. It's so bottom up. Like, everything is driven by organic, grassroots, open source development, innovation, communication, just concepts, ideas, and the willingness to just learn. That's all it's about. It's just so academic. Even white papers, even the concept of white papers. The thing that just upsets me the most about this conflict between, I guess, what you call CeFi and DeFi, that does seem to exist, this tension. Like, for example, the ICO boom happened, right? When the ICO boom happened, everybody that was in ICOs, everybody that was involved in ICOs, was mostly, it's like Europe. Now, the United States represents 24% of the wealth in the world, so you can't count that out, right? But at the same time, a lot of innovation was happening in the Netherlands and Singapore and Japan and even China and Spain and France. It was just crazy. And even in the UK, there's a bit of a hub of computer science and innovation and blockchain technology. So what you end up having is this situation where America gets kind of pissed. They're missing out, right? And so what they do is they say, security tokens is going to be the new hot thing. So they can have their conferences, just like all of the conferences in Singapore, Blockchain Week, and Spain, Blockchain, Barcelona, Blockchain. Like, all of these conferences. If you don't know, there are these conferences that people would go to all around the world to talk about blockchain and cryptocurrency. And most of them were in Europe. Most of them. A lot of them were in France. Like, the Ethereum Community Conference is in Paris. So you have these conferences that are in Europe mostly, but it's a lot of young Americans, young developers, young Europeans, people from all over the world traveling to these conferences to talk blockchain, talk crypto, meeting one another, and doing hackathons and sharing their concepts and their code bases, and people going on GitHub and sharing open source development. And then all of a sudden, yeah, security tokens, nobody's gonna invest in DeFi because DeFi, yeah, security tokens, you know, security tokens is the new hot thing. Which is complete nonsense. It's complete nonsense because people who understand Solidity and understand Ethereum know that Ethereum is perfectly capable of issuing security tokens, and Microsoft is building on Ethereum, and Google is building on Ethereum, and your mom, she's building on Ethereum. So look, everybody's building on Ethereum. They've onboarded most developers in the space because, you know, they're just Ethereum. It's just the thing. It's just the ecosystem and also the code base. So you have this thing that's very sticky. You lock people in. They're using Solidity. They know Solidity. It took them a while to learn it to begin with. And then they start to find all of these things that they can do with it that you just can't do in traditional finance. And then traditional finance says, oh, of course, we can do that, or you can do that, and you can just have the digital dollar. We can do that. Yeah, we can do that. No, you can't. You can't. And you don't know that you can't because you don't care. You don't care enough to really look. But then what starts to happen is the truth comes out. And slowly but surely, all of these financial analysts and these guys who aren't allowed to tell you that they've invested in this stock or that stock realize, hey, I can invest in Bitcoin and nobody needs to know and I don't have to tell anybody. And then all of a sudden they start talking about Bitcoin. There you go. I don't think there's a single analyst on CNBC that ever said anything good about Bitcoin that didn't have some. I'm sure there's plenty that said bad things that had some, but I think once they start talking positively about it, it's because they were all holding it. They were just like, Bitcoin. And then as soon as someone started to say bad things, they were like, oh, Bitcoin. Now, I do think there's a learning curve. I think people are in their own world and you're doing your job day to day. So if you're doing your job day to day, that's what you're doing. That's what you're into. And so it's hard. You don't have the mental bandwidth to understand the technology or even try. Everybody's busy. Everybody's working. They're doing their own thing. So if you're going to completely uproot and revolutionize something, completely change it around, you got to understand that some people are going to be burned and scathed. Some people aren't going to want to adapt to that change. Some people aren't going to like that change. Some people don't know what that change is going to be, especially if you're in a comfortable situation. And most people like to believe that if you're rich and you're powerful, there's no way in hell there's going to be a shift to new players without the permission of those old players. And so this thing that's open source, that's from the bottom up, that's based on what you know and not who you know, this thing where an individual coder can code a contract and within 2 months have $600 million in liquidity in their project and nobody knows them. They're just somebody that just came along and learned how to code it because all the information is open source and available and you can fork other projects. This thing that allows for people with no power to acquire it simply through knowledge alone, this thing somehow is just going to get taken over by the powers that be, by the powers it was built to undermine, infiltrate, and replace. I call bullshit on that. Some people don't get this, but it's worth talking about. Cryptocurrency and blockchain technology, quantum computing, machine learning, artificial intelligence, all of it is converging. Solar power, it's converging. And we're about to have a society where the area that has the most land that's most exposed to the sun will be the wealthiest. Where's that? So basically the meek shall inherit the earth, right? We're about to have a culture that will be able to connect to satellites with their minds using Neuralink. And a lot of this stuff that seems like science fiction is about to become reality. And if you've been paying attention to CRISPR or if you've been paying attention to the genome projects and just fintech in general, if you've been paying attention to all the stuff that's going on with quantum computing and just smart contract development, artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, now the Internet of People that's forming, virtual reality, hologram technology, augmented reality. If you've been paying attention to any of this, then you know that we're at a convergence and that the real reason why the traditional financial system as you know it will no longer be able to exist and the real reason why Bitcoin and blockchain technology is emerging so aggressively is more to do with how these projects are getting funding and how ideas and innovation needs to be supported in the future going forward. And that is through Web3 technology, you know, that is through decentralized autonomous organizations, self-owning cars, self-owning companies. That's just the way it needs to be. One thing that people often say about Bitcoin with taxes and taxation in general, like how will these things be taxed? Oh, regulators are always concerned about regulators and regulation. There needs to be an understanding that regulators don't understand. And that is part of the problem. And the real reason why people don't understand, that regulators don't fully understand, is because they don't fully understand. They don't understand what Bitcoin is. In order for someone to understand what a smart contract is, they must first understand what Bitcoin is. Before you can understand what Ethereum is, before you can understand what an NFT is, you got to understand what Bitcoin is, what blockchain is, what Ethereum is, what smart contracts are. And people just don't get that. They don't understand. And it gets more intricate and more complicated. You start getting into yield farming, Binance Smart Chain, Cardano, just encryption in general, and ZK Snarks, and zero knowledge proofs. All of it just gets all convoluted, and it's its own field of expertise, which is one thing. So they should have never called it a coin to begin with, because for some reason, financial experts think they know about Bitcoin or that they can advise or speak on it, which they can't and shouldn't. Just the idea that Bitcoin can go to zero. If you ever hear someone say, oh, Bitcoin's going to go to zero. If you know anything about Bitcoin, you know that they don't know what they're talking about. But you also hear some very intelligent people referring to it as Bitcoins. Whenever you hear someone say Bitcoins, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. It's Bitcoin. Always. So you have this situation where it's a new technology. And people are just trying to figure their, you know, find their footing and figure out where they fit into the mix of it all. And also, no one wants to be left behind by the big money train. And the big idea that's being lost is that it's a vote for sovereignty of wealth and independence, peace of mind, censorship resistant. It's borderless. It's politically neutral. Bitcoin has no emotion. Bitcoin does not care if you're making money, etc. And so if it's going to empower the masses and bank the unbanked and do all of that, then there must be some level of understanding as to why that's necessary before, you know, you rush in. So I'm just still trying to find my format, trying to find my feet. But basically, I want to talk about NFTs. Let's talk about NFTs. The non-fungible token movement, it appears to be a way for the hardcore original holders, the original whales of the space, to allocate funds to the ideology they most identify with. In many ways, I guess you can call it money laundering, but in many ways, it's like a way for people to get cryptocurrency, large amounts of cryptocurrency, in the hands of creative types or people that are going to shape the ideology of the ecosystem in the future or going forward. Like, if you look at a lot of Beeple's work, for example, he definitely has a message. He has a message. And to be honest, I kind of agree with his message about a lot of stuff. And he's also very informed when it comes to contemporary game changers or people that are influencing the world in a positive way. And so the fact that he is sharing that information with his public and the people who purchase his art is brilliant. It's an amazing thing. His whole energy, the vibe of like how he did the work, he did art every single day consistently for like 13 years or so, just grinding away. And the idea of using Cinema 4D and three-dimensional art, or like virtual reality art, creating your own art gallery, or the gallery itself being the art. Someone could put on a VR headset. I remember this when Oculus first came out. Not when it first came out, but when Samsung, I believe it was like the S7 Plus, they had a thing where you get like a free Oculus with the phone. You can connect the phone to the Oculus and you can see VR. I remember having that. And I remember just being in that for like hours and hours and hours until basically had a migraine, or until you're about to just black out, pass out, because it was just so intense. And some of the graphics and some of the art that was created, some of those worlds that were created, it was just amazing. It's amazing. So this has been around for a while, the stuff of digital art in general has been around for a while. I sincerely believe that NFTs are going to go into people issuing shares of companies, and capital raise is going to be done, because you can actually issue physical stock as well as crypto. Like if you have like a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization on the Ethereum blockchain, where someone would need to have like private keys and they would have voting tokens and all of these different things. Some people don't know how to set those wallets up, or it takes a while for them to set their wallets up or to have their private keys and whatnot. And then to also have shares that are connected to a publicly traded company, which is like heresy to someone in the DeFi space. But some individuals, they want stock, they want physical stock, and they want crypto, and they want both. They want access to the DAO and also access to the company or the foundation or the trust or whatever. So you can literally, with NFTs, you can encrypt and tokenize anything, any form, any deed, anything. And I think the thing about the royalties that people like is cool. But Adam B. Levine, I actually had a Zoom call with him for some junior editing job thing he had going on. But Adam B. Levine, I was listening to him the other day talking about NFTs on his podcast. And he was talking about how people think they're going to get these commissions, but it's not actually, it's coded in to the platform itself, but not necessarily coded into the contract itself. So it's like, it's not set up in such a way where if someone transfer the token to another individual, that 10% or that 5% or that 3% automatically goes to the artist. This is not something standard. So you can sit there and you can put it in the NFT on OpenSea or Nifty Gateway or whatever. But if somebody wants to transfer that token peer-to-peer to someone else without paying the artist, they can. And so there's no real guarantee around that. I know it's enticing to think that that's what people are going to do, but it's not necessarily the case. And so that's one thing that's very appealing about NFTs, the ability to have those royalties and those commissions. And they're like, oh, the music industry and all these people are going to get into it. Trust me, it's not as finite, as legit, as stable as one might think just yet. It could get there, though. And the whole notion of smart contracts and Solidity smart contract development is a big part of this that people need to recognize. I think Eminem's making an NFT and Snoop Dogg's making an NFT. And then with the ICOs, Floyd Mayweather was trying to get in on the ICOs. And then you got Akon, who's actually making a solar city, like multiple solar cities and Acoin and all that. And that is legit on top of legit. He's actually making a real world Wakanda. I was watching a YouTube video about that earlier today. So I don't know. It depends on how you're viewing it. I mean, it has nothing to do with NFTs. That's straight up just crypto. But still, the things you can do with this technology make it very clear that people are not going to be able to stop it.
A New World Economic Forum paper by Derek O'Halloran and Francisco D'Souza highlights innovations to advance and refine a new paradigm for the business of data. The following is that paper entitled, Data is the New Gold. This is how it can benefit everyone, while harming no one. Digitalization is yielding vast quantities of data, which offer opportunities for business, human well-being and the environment, if used effectively. New business models and technologies are allowing organizations to use data to generate top-line value while preserving individual agency and privacy. A World Economic Forum paper highlights innovations to advance and refine this new paradigm for the business of data. COVID-19 has dealt the world a twin crisis. We face not only our greatest global health shock but also our greatest economic shock in a century. With these dual crises comes a twin watershed moment. First, whether for school, work, health or keeping in touch with family and friends, we have realized the deep value of digital technologies. Second, the appetite for change, arguably a more challenging shift to achieve, has grown significantly. as we urgently reset the world's economic foundations for a more equitable, resilient, and prosperous future, these two interconnected variables come into play. The use of technology in business has a crucial role in shaping a redefinition of economic and social systems. Digitalization is yielding vast quantities of data, which offer a wealth of possibilities for business, human well-being, and the environment. Data as a new factor of production. In April, the Chinese government made it official. The authorities now recognize data as a new factor of production, reflecting how it is changing business models, industry boundaries, and market structures. Used with wisdom, a more granular data-driven understanding of communities, individuals, and cells, or of complex natural ecosystems, industry value chains, and the materials can open new possibilities for well-being. Handled poorly, data and analytics can be used to exacerbate inequality. The former delivers benefits we cannot imagine, the latter delivers ills we can imagine all too well. For companies large and small, around the world, their future depends on using data effectively. But this is just part of the story. Many companies feel they lack maturity or actionable understanding to be able to use data effectively. It is a source of value, but also a source of existential reputational risk or liability, regulatory constraint, and commercial sensitivity. Furthermore, value and responsibility are often seen as being on opposite sides of the spectrum. These challenges stymie innovation and leave us falling short on the promise of data-driven innovations. Yet a new wave of innovations in business models and technological capabilities, driven by companies across every sector and region, is changing this paradigm. The old way of using data analytics is through a focus on increased efficiency and better post-hoc decision-making. The new way is to use data to generate top-line value. The new use cases frequently draw on data from multiple sources, generate value for multiple entities, and embed both end user and partner interests. There are four emerging archetypes of this data-driven value creation: new value pools, new business models, richer stakeholder experiences, and better decisions. For example, the machine learning ledger orchestration for drug discovery, Melody, is a consortium of 10 pharmaceutical companies, including Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, and GlaxoSmithKline, which is pooling data to train machine learning algorithms and help develop new antibiotics. Blockchain and federated learning ensure traceability while allowing data to remain on individual companies' servers, protecting commercially sensitive and proprietary information. As the first instance in the pharmaceutical industry of a collaboration in which artificial intelligence, AI, models are both the enabler and the recipient of data sharing, Melody is accelerating drug discovery, development, and go-to-market timescales while reducing costs. It serves as a precedent for commercial partnerships for distributed and shared value creation for business and society. A new wave of technologies are emerging that give companies new options, allowing organizations to generate insights without exposing the underlying raw data. By providing the assurance that governments seek, adoption of these technologies reduces the pressure on governments to regulate. For example, Points uses a confidential computing framework to make data usable but not visible to multiple parties. Payment services are using Points to allow banks to train credit scoring and the marketing models on its data, and they receive post-transaction data in return. Duality Technologies, together with the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Harvard Medical School, has used a system that removes barriers to sharing and analyzing sensitive genomic medical data, which is usually subject to stringent privacy protections. It supports the analysis of complex diseases, including the response to COVID-19 and the development of personalized medicine. These innovations, along with new human-centered business practices, do more than address business challenges. They also empower stakeholders and preserve individual agency and privacy. Using these new capabilities to protect the interests of all stakeholders opens new possibilities for market, revenue, experience, and insight generation that is sustainable because all parties benefit. Companies that demonstrate leadership in such models and practices not only create new opportunities, but establish trusted relationships with customers and build sustainable value. New partnerships leverage complementary strengths while protecting the core, and governments can be proactively supported in their goal to protect consumers. The result of these new opportunities and incentives is a paradigm shift. Companies can use data responsibly while developing sustainable new services and revenue streams. Since these new collaborations and partnerships are not constrained by traditional industry value chains, the cross-sectoral partnerships are eroding traditional value pools and shaping the industries of tomorrow. A new model based on collaborative ecosystems, trustworthy data stewardship and aligning business success with better outcomes for all, is already emerging. The World Economic Forum has launched a new paper, highlighting the latest innovations to advance and refine the paradigm.
Now, what I'm about to say, most people don't know. And I don't know why they don't know it. Most people don't mention it. You hear a lot about NFTs and you hear a lot about ICOs and hear a lot about initial exchange offerings and Binance Launchpad and Binance Smart Chain and Ethereum Killers and Polkadot and blockchain and institutional investors. But what you don't hear about is what started the bull run. And many people that have been here in this space for a very long time know that it's not a bunch of VCs that just rushed in and ushered into the space. It's not Michael Saylor. It's not Mark Cuban. It's not Raoul Paul. It's not Pompliano and all of the VCs and US regulators. It's not any of that. It's DeFi. Everybody knows that was here in 2017 and it stayed. Everybody knows it was mining Bitcoin back in 2009 and 2010 and 2011. Everybody knows that DeFi sparked the Bitcoin bull run. DeFi as in decentralized finance. And what we also know is that Maker is the heart of DeFi. And that makes Maker the most important token to the Ethereum ecosystem, but also the most important token, period, in the entire crypto space. Arguably more important than Bitcoin, and here's why. If Bitcoin is important, then DeFi is more important. And if Bitcoin is not important, then DeFi is not important. You could also make the claim that, you know, Bitcoin could die down and some other token could come along, and the reason why it'll be valuable will be because of DeFi. Well, Maker is the heart of DeFi as we know it, because Ethereum has the most developers on its in its ecosystem. And most of those developers had to learn Solidity, which is a language unique specifically to Ethereum. You have your JavaScript, you have your C, your C++s, your Pythons, your WebAssembly, but Solidity is the language of smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain, which is the prominent blockchain that uses smart contracts. Now you have Cardano that's trying to take from the Ethereum ecosystem and claims to be focusing on banking the unbanked, at least creating identity, digital identity in Africa. And that's a very, very honorable pursuit. But it's led by Charles Hodgkinson, who, as academic as he may be, he's very academic and focused, academically inclined. If you've read The Infinite Machine, then you know there's two sides to that coin. That when Ethereum was being created by Charles Hodgkinson and Dr. Gavin Wood and Vitalik and all of the other guys that were helping along with that, that there was a lot of there were a lot of egos in the room. There were a lot of egos involved. There was a lot of falling out that happened. People wanted to push things different ways. And Charles Hodgkinson, I think he's worth over $600 million now, if I'm even pronouncing his name right. I think he's worth over $600 million now. Now, I've seen some of his videos on YouTube and whatnot, and he definitely knows his stuff, as do many people in this space. But the one unsaid thing, the one thing that some very intelligent sounding people have overlooked, whether it be intentionally or unintentionally, is that Maker is the heart of DeFi, and that Maker is the most valuable token in the cryptocurrency space. And everyone will kind of see, and when I say valuable, I want to clarify what I mean by that. What I mean specifically is the elephant in the room that everybody cares most about is, how much money can I make? How can I make a lot of money? I want to make a lot of money. How much money can I make? What price is this going to be? What price is that going to be? And this is not financial advice, but hear me on this. If Bitcoin's supply is in, it was like 21 million, kind of really 17 million with all the people that have died and lost hard drives and whatnot. If Bitcoin supply is 17 million, 21 million to 17 to 21 million, depending on, you know, whether or not you want the actual number or you, you know, you're going by Satoshi's white paper. If that's the supply, then you have to recognize that that means that Maker only needs to have, because Maker has a supply of 1 million. So Maker theoretically would only need 1/20 the market cap in order to have the same exact supply as Bitcoin. And the entire DeFi ecosystem is built on top of Maker. When you go to DeFi Pulse, you don't see Bitcoin dominance, you see Maker dominance. You don't see Ethereum dominance, you see Maker dominance. And that is by design. Maker is the main source from which DAI, the main stablecoin, is created. And people like Michael Saylor, brilliant guy doing the Lord's work by sharing the good news of crypto to all of the CEOs and Fortune 500 venture capitalist investors, and trying to get them to move Bitcoin to their balance sheets, and having all these conferences and trying to convert these gold bugs into being Bitcoin bugs. You know, he recently said that Bitcoin ultimately, or the space, 99% of the people that are going to be in this space are going to want to hold their Bitcoin on centralized exchanges where there's reporting and it's regulated and there's KYC and AML and all this other nonsense. And I know he's a smart guy, so I don't know if he's saying that because he believes it or if he's just saying that because he has to. Because when you take $1 billion and you put it in Bitcoin through Gemini and Coinbase and other regulated exchanges and whatnot, when you do that, you then can't go around talking about how DeFi is going to take over the world. But let it be known, most people are not fully aware of just how much DeFi impacts centralized regulated exchanges, nor are they aware of just how much centralized regulated exchanges don't impact DeFi. So you do have a situation where people are very delusional. And for the brilliance of Michael Saylor, you know, because he has these zones that he gets into when he rants, and some of the stuff he says, it has never been said before in the space, and it's eloquent and it's very well thought out. He also at one point, you know, said a lot of bad things about Bitcoin. You know, he you know, there are a lot of very intelligent people that are used to being the smartest guy in the room and used to not really interacting with people that may know more than they do about wealth creation, since they're like, you know, killing it. So if you've been killing it for a decade in regards to wealth creation and wealth preservation, you probably don't really think it's possible that there's something out there, some asteroid out there that's going to make you extinct. You know, you've probably seen, or you've probably seen a lot of snake oil, presenting itself as an asteroid. Well, Bitcoin, I'm sure a lot of these guys saw Bitcoin that way back in 2012, 2011, 2010, 2009. They saw it that way. And now, because there are people that they respect and admire telling them otherwise, they're just like, you know, piling in. They probably still see it that way deep down, because the average Stone Age monkey brain is probably thinking, oh, don't reinvent the wheel. Or like Peter Thiel says, don't compete. I think it's fair to say Bitcoin is definitely competing. At a certain point, people are going to have to realize that centralized finance isn't going anywhere. A lot of people say it's a fad. They say ICOs were a fad. They don't understand what is actually going on and what it means. Solidity code, what it means. They don't understand. And, you know, to be honest, you can't blame them, because it is complex and it is intricate and it is confusing. And if I were them, I wouldn't understand either. But I'm not them. And I do understand. And I can't unlearn what I understand. So I have to find a way to cope with the fact that I don't need their permission. And neither do you. DeFi stands for defiance.